Here we are, hitting up events, drinking our way through Chicago beer, and trying not to miss a thing.
Yeah, because, you know, got a cork popped out, boom, it flies like fucking 10 feet. We're like, yeah, let's do it.
You know, all you have to do is add some fruit, stir it up, and ride that milkshake wave.
Whenever I see him, I gotta take a photo with the most decorated brewer in Chicago, Jonathan Cutler.
It'll be like the stuff you hear. You ever go to every time you go to Floyd's, all the music sounds like this. Raw, raw, raw.
Sometimes you want a small beer, but really, you want a big beer.
You gotta take in all those big aromatic hops.
Hey, what are you doing this weekend? Waiting in line for a bottle release?
Should have never been a fad. The black IPA is delicious.
Hey, and welcome to Chicago Beer Pass. I'm Brad Chmielewski.
Brad, what's up, man? I'm Nick White.
And we are on location out in Glen Ellyn.
Glen Ellyn, Illinois. Hello. We're at Two Hound Red with a fellow we've known for a super long time. Brad's been to his place, but this is our first time having him on the show, Mr. Steve Warden-Dyke.
Represent.
How are you, man?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Thanks for coming here.
Yeah, this is it's super fun and quaint, and they're closed, and I don't know, feel like we have like a private, I don't know, a private viewing of the brewery right now.
I could get used to this. Usually when we come out, people are like, go in this corner or go upstairs. We have to find a spot, you know. But this is like...
I'm lucky the day that you guys chose was the day we have closed. We're closed on Mondays, but we're open every other day. And yeah, we get to check this out, and we can mosey around, and I can show you around the brewery as well, and we can do all that kind of stuff.
Nice, yeah. The only thing, we get beer today, but we don't, because you guys are closed, no food.
No food,
your
not
food
today.
Is pretty tasty. I was out here a few weeks ago, and I enjoyed myself.
We actually just got a new chef, so new things are coming.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, we got to talk about the beer first.
Yeah, for
beer,
sure. Yeah. For sure.
Beer podcast, we got to talk about that. What are we drinking? You just poured us fresh stuff.
This is fresh. This is straight out of the Bright Tank. This is Pale Horse. It is an IPA. I know it sounds like it's a pale ale, but... it is an India pale ale. So the whole idea for the name comes from Revelations and, you know, riding on the pale horse.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, and that's the conspiracy theory in the world, in the day's book, yeah.
Yeah, so it came from that. And got a new can coming out for it and the logo, which will be coming to stores and pours here.
Okay.
Stores and pours,
stores,
man.
Stores and pours.
Speaking of logos and stores and pours, when we see the name on the feeds, on the social feeds, you almost want to say 200.
Yeah, I think that was kind of part of the idea that they had. I know what we talked about in the name, and I was going to go into this, and I was actually going to put a bio kind of on our website because I know you had mentioned that it wasn't there. So
I'm not sure the reasoning or history behind this logo.
Yeah, yeah. So the name we think of as like, you know, there's two sides of the house. There's this kitchen side, the restaurant and all that kind of stuff. And then in back, we've got the brewery. And with that, we've also got kind of two sides where it's in-house production and then also what we sell outside.
Okay.
So that's the two. The hound is, you know, well, and the color, the red, deals with passion. And so hound maybe not the most aggressive dog, but but maybe a fun-loving kind of way. And then, yeah, you know, red being the passion part.
I feel like that's a very practical name. I think I had in my head some epic story forged from the, like...
We were overthinking it, for sure.
Oh, yeah, or some historical reference or something, yeah.
I'm like, is it a fox? Are they in the Fox Lake region?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, it does look like a fox, and I have nothing else to say about it.
Okay. But you weren't... you came later to the project.
I did,
this isn't... You weren't, like... from ground start here and going.
So, yeah, there was a brewer here. They started in, I believe, August 2019. And I came on board in August of 2020. So,
okay.
Like you mentioned before, I was at Workforce before that. We all kind of took a break during COVID. And when Brandon was hiring everyone back, I wasn't ready to do that thing yet because I was still a little scared of what was going on out there.
Okay.
But the other guys took their jobs back, and then about the time I was ready to come back, I talked to Brandon. He's like, we just don't have the sales yet. It just wasn't there yet. And so he's like, just keep calling me every 2 weeks. So I kept calling, and it didn't work out. So a chef friend of mine had a job here, and so I talked to him, not knowing that he was here, but I talked to him about preparation of a meal, and he's like, did you know that I'm working here? And I was like, I had heard something. I didn't know where that was or what that was about. I asked him who was brewing here. He told me, but that, you know, he might not stick around. Okay. So I was like, well, you know, throw my name in the hat. He's like, are you serious? Because I'll get you the job right now.
Oh. And he might not stick around because he is fired.
So in comes me and took the job because I, you know, just couldn't, you know, it's hard to not eat. So I wanted to, you know, have an appointment.
Was the,
these bills don't pay themselves.
Right, right.
Was the previous brewer, was he from somewhere else? Was this his first, or do you know?
So, yeah.
Or do we know?
I actually used to work with him at Two Brothers back in the day, too.
Okay.
So, but he started here with, he knew one of the owners, and I guess pitched the idea, and that's how it all formed together, and now I'm here.
That's awesome for you, and also, but also like terrible timing for them to launch in August of 2019.
17, yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
So were they shut down then almost that for that year?
I should ask that question. I've never asked what happened during that. When I was back was August 2020,
yeah.
And we were doing, you know, mostly growler sales.
Okay.
And I showed you the small system that I brew on periodically. That was my main focus when we started because the sales just weren't there.
Okay.
And we just had to like, but we were doing like to-go orders of food and things like that, and that kind of like kept us on. And then
the restaurant wasn't open yet.
Right. Okay. And then as soon as, we started our patio and stuff outside to be able to have outdoor dining when that was allowed.
Too.
Yeah. And you'll see that when it's dark outside now, but, as soon as sales started to pick back up, which they did, then I started brewing on the big system, and yeah.
That's good. Like,
yeah.
I guess even from like the growler sales, especially being so new, you guys wouldn't have had that like community being like, we gotta support this place. They'd be like, that place just opened. We don't care.
Right. Yeah. And there was a big that when they first opened in 2019, I heard all the stories about how there was like this big push and the place was just jam packed all the time.
Cool.
And then And then I come in, and it's just, you know, COVID dead.
Yeah, it takes a lot of balls to open the space up during that time. So you got the pilot system, right? So that's probably like a one-barrel system or something like that. And then you got the big system. Can you talk about, like, you know, capacity or how much you guys are brewing?
It's a 15-barrel brew house.
Okay.
But I can put 20 barrels into the boil kettle in my fermenters, which are also 15-barrel fermenters. I can fit very easily 18 barrels. I'm going to try to push 19 one day.
Yeah.
But, so I usually brew 15-barrel batches, though. And just for freshness sake, just keep it turning. That's what I do.
Is there you're a good guy to ask this, actually, because you've been at a few places. Mm-hmm. As a brewer, does the type of system matter at all? Like, if you're at where the Two Brothers or Limestone, or is there an adjustment period at all?
For sure. Yeah, because everything works a little bit different.
Yeah.
For instance, at Workforce, it was, what you'd say, semi-automatic. It had a touch screen, and you'd do portions of the brew. You'd press, like, this button and this button, and things would happen, you know. Here, it's all valve turns. It's all manual, but you get that real sense of I did this. You know?
Yeah, it's kind of like
it
like
wasn't
old
just
world
like ding,
kind of
ding, ding, and then you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Nick, when we were driving up here, you were talking about like where people get these systems from, or like
because
there was like for a while like three spots. There was like China, the German systems, and then like a place in Canada. like, right?
Yeah,
is that still the case, or do you know,
or where's I know this one from? Some, at least one of the places during COVID closed down.
Off camera, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I won't get into that, but yeah, one place closed down, and then there's Crawford. They're fairly local. I can't remember where, but that's who we work with, and they're, you know, I call them and they come here. So
that's
awesome. Yeah,
that's important. Yeah, because Lagunitas, or well, Lagunitas built a house across the street from Lagunitas for the Germans because they were tired of flying them over, and then we heard the story about Grace Central where it took the Germans a month to come, and then they were losing clients because of it. So having someone come out is actually a big deal. And oh yeah, what else was I gonna? It was something else I was gonna say about that. About systems. Oh yeah, the guy who worked at Urban Renewal Brewing, he was a guy who sold.
Where's that?
Well, it was the old Metropolitan space, the original Metro space.
Okay, right.
It's since closed, but I think what piqued our interest in these systems and like where they come from is that that guy used to sell systems from state to state, got tired of traveling, settled in Chicago, started a family, and started brewing.
But so that would just go help everyone fix their systems that broke.
Yeah, he started. He was the guy that you called when the systems broke. That's how he started.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so,
on the system itself, what kind of beers are you brewing here? You're talking about a little before show and like the audience maybe seems different than the workforce.
I tend to brew a bit more traditionally, whereas you know you'll see a lot of pastry stouts and the like and like the fruited sours and stuff. I do some here and there, but for the most part. You know, Nick, and you know too. I came up in like the earlier times when people were so excited about all these classic beers coming up, and like I remember Belgian beers were like the thing that everyone was so excited about.
Sure, yeah.
And now people haven't even tried those beers, and and they're all on these pastry stouts. So I'm trying to be the place where if you're looking for something. Like that, something that I was really excited to try when I was coming up. This is where you can get that thing.
Yeah,
that's a fact.
Is that are people, I guess, responding to that, or are they like, oh, that's like old man beer?
I don't know. I don't know.
Where's the haze, bruh? Yeah.
I don't know if they are responding to it because they're nostalgic in the way that I am, but they definitely enjoy what they're drinking.
Right. Or they've never had it and it's new, and they're like, well, I just want new, man.
Yeah.
There's something to be said about beer integrity, right? Because, like, the hazies and the fruity sours, I mean, those are fine, but that consumer is probably going to end up getting, like, a seltzer or a margarita or shit, right?
Yeah,
but a beer-flavored beer, if they really like it, they'll get another beer.
Right.
So that's an important flag to wave.
And I really want to build that sort of a crowd. You know, I want people that want beer that tastes like beer.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah. You want to sell beer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we talked about a lot of your stats before you got here. Where are you from? Like, let's talk about your origin story a little bit. Like, how'd you end up, you know, brewing in all these suburban locations? Where are you from?
Well, I grew up in a town called Bellwood, if you're familiar with where that is. Or it's around, like, Elmhurst, Westchester.
Okay, Elmhurst isn't too far from here.
Yeah, so suburban. And then... I was in the military, and that's kind of where the story starts. So my cousin lives in Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
And I was stationed in Fort Lewis, Washington. That was my first duty station, and it's about a three-hour drive to Portland. So I used to drive and go visit him, and he used to take me out and all sorts of debauchery when I was 19 years old.
Yeah.
And he was 27. So... I remember him saying, do you want to go hang out with my dad and you guys can go see Mount St. Helens and like all this, or do you want to go out like and see bars and like we can go do crazy things? And I'm like, bye, uncle. So, but I remember one time driving by, and this is at 19, driving by a homebrew supply shop and just thinking to myself, and I had never seen one of those before, but thinking to myself, I'll bet you at my age I can buy all the stuff that I need to make it because none of that is beer, right? It's not at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And so, sure enough, they sold it to me. And then I was in my barracks making beer. And then, yeah. So I started homebrewing around 95, 96, something like that.
Okay.
And got out from that, you know, did the whole IT job thing. And then that collapsed around 2008 when the housing markets all fell apart. And so I had to look for other work, and I'm like, what else am I good at? And I'm like, well, I know how to make beer.
Sure, okay.
So I'm like, I'm going to introduce myself to some people in some way and get myself into the industry. So I took a job at a an Irish pub as a dishwasher and introduced myself to every sales rep that came in, and I would have, like, my scouts out, like, let me know if there's a sales rep. I'm going to go up and talk to him. And I went and talked to everyone, and just so happened, Limestone was opening up in town. Okay. So I got introduced to them, and at the time they were still doing construction, and I knew nothing about construction, but I'm like, I will hit my thumb on the wall for you, and I think I did that. And
I will bleed for you. Get me into beer.
So I started, nailing up walls and whatever, and then it came time when they started brewing, and I was like, can I brew with you, and talking about Ken McMullen and that whole thing. And so he let me brew with him a couple times. I was like, well, can I get a job? And then he's like, well, we need you. We're really looking for someone who's been classically trained or educated. And so I was like, well, I'll enroll at Siebel. So I went to Siebel, came back with my certificate. I'm like, now what?
Yeah, let's do it.
Where's my job?
So I got the job. And then that also, oh, and we also formed a homebrew club while we were there. It's called PALE, the Plainfield Ale and Lager Enthusiasts.
Oh, okay. I love these acronyms. All the homebrew clubs, there's Chaos, there's BOSS, Brewers of South Suburbia. I love these acronyms.
So we started that, and, I'm in the meetings with them when I got hired, and they're all like, man, he got the job. Like, what about?
Like, I put in the work, man.
Yeah. I was doing things I didn't even know how to do.
Were you, when you were like first homebrewing and outside of Portland stuff, were you out drinking at all these places?
Because
that
was the
first wave of this craft beer that we don't really even know. Like, we came in this like second wave.
It kind of predates us.
For sure, but there was like Red Hook and Pyramid and like all these places out there, and I was too young to go into any of these places, but I would drive by them.
Yeah.
But, my roommates and other guys in the company were going to places and bars and all that stuff, and they'd bring stuff back, and I'd be like...
Use my homebrew for that.
And I was trying that stuff. But that's not really what spurred me on. What really spurred me on was I gave my home, when I went to Korea, because I couldn't bring all my stuff with me to Korea, I gave all of it to my brother. And my brother started brewing with his father-in-law, then his beer got really good. And I was like, well, this can't be because my stuff's crap, but it's my stuff. And so I started to read more books and like
Log on the fire.
Get like, some techniques. And then I was like, I brought it to my brother. I'm like, try this. And I'm like, now what? And then, but
you couldn't let your brother beat you. So it became like a little sibling rivalry.
Yeah, for sure.
I pushed it.
Cool. So then, I don't want to belabor the point too much, but he was. We were both doing extract batches, and then he started doing all grain before I did, and then I did all grain, and then it was like back and forth and back and forth until I got a job, and then I'm like, now I'm a professional, so
nice.
What you got now?
Cool. All right, we had to take a little break there, but Nick, you got a fresh beer here, a different color.
Yeah, it's a lot darker. I think it's a dark lager, right?
Yeah, it's a Mexican-style dark lager. We call it Dia de los Muertos, Day of the Dead, and you'll notice a lot of my themes are a little darker, but but I like that. So
you said fuck, no joke.
But I always wanted to do a beer like that. We talked earlier about the beers that I had when I was coming up, it kind of got me into the brewing game and like all the stuff that was happening in Portland and whatnot. But it's beers like this that got me into it. It was like Modelo Negra, which is kind of what this was modeled after, and things like Killian's Red and beers like that, which aren't maybe the most glamorous, but the beers that you got into the game from.
Right. Those are some of the most more important beers, really.
Dude,
like
I was thinking, I've had a plateau of, Miller High Life, right? And then Modelo, Modelo Negro, and then Sam Adams, and then Full Blown Craft. So,
yeah. Modelo. This past year recap, I was like, I drank more 312 in the last year than anything else. Like, it's just like, it's safe and it just like, it delivers. And that's kind of what you want from a lot of those, like, a lot of those big beers that kind of get you into beer and keep you drinking. And
For sure.
You get a dark lager too, and it reminds you of the range of lagers. Like, it's not just Fizzy Yellow, right? Lagers have a wide range, and people forget it. Yeah.
So we were talking about Limestone, and then so you left there and you went to Two Brothers?
So yeah, then so Limestone closed, and I was looking for a job, and I didn't know where I was going to go, and I started packaging grain and stuff. My friend Brandon opened up a homebrew supply shop called Chicago Brew Works, and originally it was located behind Benny's in Plainfield, and I was doing that for a while, and then I did know some people at Two Brothers, so I put feeler out there, and I got accepted to get a job there. So, cool. Yeah, so then but I never left Chicago Brew Works. I would work at Two Brothers 5 days a week, and then 2 days a week I'd be at...
Free baby shake.
Yeah.
So Two Brothers, were you working in the giant oak fooders?
Yeah, we worked with those. That was back when, you know, Adam Smasher, Yeah, it was Adam's.
I feel like it was very exciting when those came in. Like, I don't know. It was like, what? I don't understand how these are working. And
And then they kind of got tried a bit, and then had leaking problems, so we stopped using them. But yeah, I remember when we first got there, and that was a big thing.
Okay. So then, how long were you at Two Brothers before?
About 2 years. Okay. And then, like I said, I was at Chicago Brew Works on the weekends and stuff. And then Brandon was like, I'm going to open up a brewery here.
Okay.
And he had already started brewing, and he was going to brew for a while. But it was getting to where the business side of things was really picking up. So he had to focus on that. And he was like, do you want to take over brewing here? So then I was doing that, and then I got an assistant, and at this time we were still brewing on the small system a lot, like what I have back there is my small system, and then it just kept growing and growing, and then they got the their big system, and then got another assistant, and it just kept growing, and until now I'm here.
This was around the time of the Misfits.
Yeah. So that's when I was talking about the brewery that I was gonna open.
Oh, Misfits.
That was that. Yeah.
What were?
When I met Steve, there was a crew. It was Jason Tallman and Rafael
Gomez.
And Rafael Gomez, and they were. I think one of them went to go open the burger joint that's way on the edges of the West Burbs.
Crusade, yeah.
Yeah, Crusade Burger Joint, and then the other fella went to Arizona. Yeah. Oh, but they were a trio, and they debuted their brewery at Workforce.
Okay.
And that was around the time I missed
it. And it was, we got a building and everything, and it was going to be where Oswego Brewing is now.
Okay.
So, but it kind of fell apart, and then Oswego got it. And
okay.
Yeah, good for them.
Yeah. Man, that's a pretty good run through, like, some of the, west suburban spots here. So that's pretty awesome to hear.
I think, Two Brothers has such a big footprint, you don't really get to hear about some of these other stories, right?
Yeah.
So I think from our perspective, like, walking down memory lane like that is kind of cool, because I wouldn't know any of this stuff otherwise.
I've got a million stories like that. I told you about the homebrew club that we started.
Pale.
So many of the breweries that are open now came from that, like Pollyanna and my brain.
Noon
works.
Whistle, maybe? I always confuse Pollyanna and Noon Whistle.
I don't know about Noon Whistle, but maybe was Paul there? I don't know. Anyway, there was a lot of them, and I'm going to be missing a bunch of them. Yeah. But like there, and then also at Two Brothers, it was like a factory for other people opening up their own breweries.
Bringing it back to Two Hound Red, I want to know a couple things, right? I really like the exponential power, you know. Yeah. Just, I really love
that's what we were drinking on the show. Is that why you like it? Because you've had like three beers, and that's one of the three.
So
that's his favorite.
Well, before Brad interrupted me, what I wanted to know was, you know, is the days of the flagship dead, or are you brewing more of one beer than other beers? Is that what's going on?
When I started here, and even up until now, a bit. The I'm a pub brewer, technically. So in that, I want to brew something different all the time, and I get to do that with the pilot system that we have. But if it's going to go out and I have to appease a large crowd, that's where the flagship comes back in, and I have to have something that when people go to the store, they're going to know what it is and look for it and go to buy it. So I think maybe for other breweries, it maybe they don't rely so much on flagships, but I think here we do.
Yeah. So is that one? Did I blank
exponential
out
power?
When you said yes.
Yes. Exponential Power is a flagship. Angel of Light, which is a American Light Lager, is a flagship. Beastly Bloodhound, which is a Red Lager flagship. Okay. So, yeah. Hazy Hound.
Oh, yeah, Hazy Hound. Yeah. Being in this space, we know the story about how it used to be a drugstore. But being in this space, we forgot that story because you've got this super cool fucking Boatra ceiling.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it just reminded me of all the other places we've been to. It's almost as if craft brewers seek these places out because we said Peace, Forbidden Root, Off the Color.
Previous Twisted Hippo space.
Twisted Hippo, fucking Two Hound Red, Gray's Lake, Light the Lamp.
Yeah.
Like, no matter where you are, everyone has, a lot of breweries have this exact same ceiling. And it's so cool. It's like an upside down boat, you know, and it's just very, it's very scenic. And it's like a reminder of the past kind of, so.
And it, for me, it reminds me a little bit of things that you might find in Chicago, but out in the burbs, it's here, you know.
Yeah,
it does feel typically, like you mentioned all these suburban spots, but I think of these as Chicago buildings.
Yeah. Even Burning Bush, like you can go on and on. Like there's a ton of breweries that have this type of ceiling, and it's this is a very cool spot. I think it's just a very chill scene, and I think that's what I was getting at. I was just like very excited about how good it feels in here.
Mm-hmm. So coming up into like the spring, summer, we were seeing some of the past beers on the cooler there. We missed Oktoberfest. We'll have to put it in our lineup.
Oh, you did miss that. That's a great beer.
Next year.
Yeah.
Any plans? You got Irish Red coming out? Are we going to have to get
that? I have sort of a... It started out as a... this is another story, but I got a few of those.
Let's go.
So I have a flagship now. It's a Red Lager. It's called Beastly Bloodhound. It when I first brewed it, I brewed it for St. Paddy's Day, and it was an Irish Red Lager, and it was called Abertach's Kiss. And Abertach was a in Irish folklore was a vampire.
Okay.
So it was like red like blood and that kind of stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah, so it took that name, but people couldn't pronounce Abertach, so there went that, and now it's Beastly Bloodhound.
Okay. So that's basically an Irish red, year-round
Irish
red.
So I have it all the time. So okay. To answer your question, I have that, and then I have an oatmeal stout on right now. I usually do a dry Irish stout called Malarkey and Shenanigans.
Oh, nice.
But this year, I have an oatmeal stout, so I think I might just go with that.
Okay.
I think that'll appease the masses.
I don't know. That name is pretty great. Like, I feel like if I saw it, I would just order it on the name alone.
Brad's so ready for St. Patrick's Day. We were drinking an English barley wine last week.
Oh, nice.
And Brad's like, I don't like this beer on name alone. I'm like, oh, because it's English and you're fucking getting tuned up for St. Patrick's Day?
Well, we were drinking those Beguile anniversary beers,
yeah, the barrels,
and they like seemed like they changed it. Some years they called it English barley wine. Some years they just called it a barley wine. So it was kind of funny to see like maybe what they felt was in vogue at the time.
Sometimes you do have to change those things. I think people have preconceived notions about certain names, And so you may have to change it to something that is more palatable for them to want to buy.
Mm-hmm. Fair. Like some folks change Russian Imperial style to like Ukraine Imperial style.
Yeah.
I've seen that.
Yeah. So,
shit like that.
All right. I don't know. That's fun. Anything else people should know about Two Hound Red, like coming out here? It's right off the metro. We've mentioned that. On the, so you could take the train in. It's really not that far to get to once you're past like the O'Hare mess.
If you live in the city, get on the train and come out here.
Yeah.
If you live along the rail line, come out here.
Yeah.
If you have a car, come out here.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, you did mention the beers in the store, and we wanted to ask you about this distribution law.
Oh yeah, I think we got to the bottom of that.
That they're taking to Springfield, and a lot of the brewers are
behind. Oh, where you can ship direct. I hope it happens.
License.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've seen like some pushback from bars or distributors, of course.
Yeah, and distributors for sure. Yeah. They always are trying to hold back our progress, I feel. But we're going to fight the good fight, and hopefully it makes its way through, and we can do that thing. I think that we should be able to. I think that the laws that stopped us from doing it that came from Prohibition are outdated and outmoded and should go away.
Yeah. During COVID, were you shipping or were you doing any of that, like deliveries?
We did like cocktails and stuff like that. Okay. Yeah. Nice. And we did do, we did. It was weird because you couldn't order them on like... the to-go services like
Drizzly or whatever.
Yeah. But if you called and said you wanted to add it to your order or something, then we did.
Yeah. Speaking of cocktails, I think it's cool that you guys have some pretty heavy hitter whiskeys up in here. There's like 20 different whiskeys. Some of them are like choice selections. I noticed that as soon as I sat down, actually. So
yeah, we got a little Pappy in here and some other things. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, this law that's. I feel like it should pass. We talked about it in the last episode, and it's just there's no reason that as a consumer, I want more options to get
exactly.
Things. So if I could order your guys' beer and have it delivered, that would be great because my corner store or my local spot might not have it. So.
And for people that don't know about us, if we're online and you see it and you're like, what's Two Hound Red? And then they're like, I think I'll try that. Let me order that. And then it just... gives you another stream of revenue.
Right. Yeah, because you make more beers than the distributor would carry in most cases. So.
Yeah,
it makes sense. It totally makes sense.
On the, I guess maybe this is not podcast,
talk that talk.
What would you guys be required to ship it out from? Like, if someone's like, I want your beer, so is now you have like a little packaging room.
I think that would be one of the challenges. That's also a challenge that goes into self distribution. So. We started out with a distributor and, you know, we'd give pallets to them and then they'd bring it to wherever it goes.
Yeah.
When you decide that you want to self-distribute, now you have to figure out, I've got to get a truck. I got to get a driver. I got to get, you know, like all those things.
Yeah.
Same would probably happen with direct ship. You'd be like, now I have to set up a packaging area and you'd get some tape and whatever boxes.
Yeah. Right. So you got to hire someone else that's like, hey, come in like once a week and just like packets of all this stuff you got to ship out.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
It's another component to the business for sure. Yeah. This is cool, man. I want to thank you for having us.
Oh, A, for sure. Thank you for coming out.
And then B, I want to tell you, man, like I've known you maybe since like 2011-ish.
Yeah.
And a big part of me understanding the suburbs is because of the Plainfield Ale Fest and, you know, following your journey. And, you know, it's just been really cool. I think we were saying when we got here, like we understand our region better because of Suburban Breweries. So we're glad to see you're still doing your thing. Congratulations on what you're doing here. Yeah. And
and keep the beer,
on talking,
the beer's great.
Yeah.
Definitely digging it.
Cheers to John Denver for our introduction.
All right. Yeah, that'll do it for this episode. Take care.
Cheers.
Cheers.